can you tell me a little bit about that particular day that you were giving the report? Who were you speaking to? Were there also the oystermen there, the community members, or just mainly agencies?
I think the primary audience was oystermen and other people working with the oyster industry, and then interested people from the community. And then there were folks there from a variety of different state agencies. So that was primarily, that was the makeup of the audience.
Yeah. Now, what was the premise of this report? Who actually called for this report to be done, this in the gathering of the information? Was it totally generated by Florida Sea Grant wanting to take a look at this problem?
So, right. So let me put this into a little bit of historic context. So in August last year, and then and especially into the early part of September, it was noticed by the oyster fishermen that they weren't harvesting as many oysters as they usually do. In fact, way fewer than normal. And it got so bad that they asked the governor to declare a state of emergency, that a fishery collapse. So the federal government can issue actually a authorization of funding if there's a fishery collapse. And we heard about that. And Jack Payne, who's the senior vice president of IFAS, and I got together, and he said, you know, this seems like something we could address and help, and we needed a team, kind of like we did with the oil spill. And then he asked me if I would chair it. So initially I got a group of faculty together from here at the University of Florida, and then we thought about who else needed to be involved. And during the next week, I invited people from all of the state agencies that are involved in managing the bay. We invited key people from the oyster industry, both oyster dealers and oyster harvesters, and then just interested people in the community. We actually have an online site for the oyster recovery team, and I think there's 88 people that are signed up as members of the team right now. So we had a meeting in mid-September, and we basically gathered all of the folks together from the community, and we said to them, what questions do you want us to answer with our research program? And the two main things were, what happened? And then what can we do going into the future that will reduce the risk that this kind of thing will happen again? And then when the what happened question kind of got broken out into a variety of things. There are some people up there who are determined that the oil spill in 2010 was the culprit. There are people who think the river flow was the culprit. There are folks who thought that over-harvesting of oysters was the culprit. So we looked at all of those. Basically anything that someone brought up was a reasonable thing. We then collected data and we looked at it through a pretty rigorous research program, one that didn't have any money. That kind of took us to two routes, actually. The agencies have a lot of data that they've collected over the years on Apalachicola Bay. So we worked with the Fish and Wildlife Commission, the Department of Environmental Protection, the National Estuarine Research Reserve up there in Apalachicola, and the Florida Department of Agriculture. And they basically worked with us, and we mined all of the data they had and met with those scientists a number of occasions to put it all together so that it could tell a story.
How important economically has the oyster industry been to Florida?
It's an important industry in that region, and it's the main source of employment. It isn't a huge number if you take the number of millions of dollars compared to the economy of the state of Florida. I think that it's an intangible value. There aren't a lot of what I call heritage communities left in Florida. Traditional communities where there's commercial fishing going on and working waterfronts. A lot of that's just been converted into condominiums. And you've got a few places left that are just jewels. And Apalachicola is one of them. Cedar Key is another one. There's a few of these left, and fewer all the time. And so that I don't know how to put a number on that intangible value. I think it's huge. And down the road, it's going to be even higher.
One of the things that I learned while doing the documentary that I produced on Apalachicola many years ago was that Apalachicola Bay in general was all of the various species, whether you were talking about scallops or finfish or oysters or whatever, that salinity question was the biggest factor in the health of the bay, whether it was, concerns about drought or fresh water coming down the Apalachicola-Chattahoochee River system. And the why should we care question was half of the seafood in the United States comes from the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
90% of the species out in the Gulf spent part of their time in Apalachicola Bay during their juvenile stages. So to bring it really home, if you for anyone in the country who likes to eat seafood in America, that seafood more than likely 50% of the time came from the Gulf of Mexico. And so there was such a direct tie to the health of that bay not being too having too much salinity in it to ruin the larval stages in the estuaries.
Yeah, so right. So it's a broader issue than just Apalachicola Bay. So Apalachicola Bay and other estuaries like that along the coast of the Gulf, they're important nurseries for a lot of the species of fish that live out in the Gulf waters.
So they must have been affected by the drought as well.
So a number of areas were affected by the drought, from up in the panhandle of Florida all the way down around to Cedar Key, and then even on the Atlantic side. The driest place in the country was the watershed that drains into Apalachicola Bay for the last 2 years. The severity of the drought was greater than anything that's been seen in the last 80 to 90 years. The river flows were lower than has been measured in the last 80 to 90 years. We kept hearing, we need more water, we need more water, we need more water. We were working mostly with the oyster industry, and we said, you know, we understand that, and the state is working on that with the other states, but you guys can't control the amount of water coming down the river. What are some things you could control in the bay and in the way you fish and the way you do restoration programs to make the fishery more resilient, so that during times of drought, it doesn't totally crash, that you still have something to go out and fish? And so that's really what we've been working on with them, more than focusing on the water flow. How do you restore oyster bars in a smart way so that when there is decent water flow again, you've got good substrate for things to settle out on and grow? How do you control the way you fish so that it's done in a sustainable manner?
Were they open to that idea?
Real open to it, yeah. And so that's been great. The oyster industry folks have really taken ownership. They've formed a new citizen group. Well, it's not a citizen, but it's an industry-based group called SMART. It includes oystermen, includes other people from the community. They want to have more control over their own destiny,